Instead of wandering to door after door, fall at the door of Satguru. All the business of this world is false. Give it up, earn the profit, and take it. This is the Bhajan O Dara Dara De Firane Nalo on page 190. If you forget the Nam, you suffer and get the fruit of your karmas. Meditate on the true Nam of the Master and remain in his will. When you say thine, thine, you breathe easily. O dear one, giving up the false path, follow the true path. Whoever comes into the refuge of the Master gets the gifts he asked for. Giving up all false disputes, take refuge in the Master. O Ajay, if you have true love, you meet beautiful Kripal. You have got the true Satguru, take refuge in him. Instead of wandering to door after door, fall at the door of Satguru. All the business of this world is false. Give it up, earn the profit, and take it. Bhajan of Sanchi on page 190.
Darte deja, O dande sabjuteja de ke laha kate jagato leja. O dada dada de firene nalo, Sati guru de darte deja. O dande sabjuteja de ke. Laha kate jagato leja. Nambulave dukutave kite karmanda falapave. Nambulave dukutave kite karmanda falapave. Nama guru da japale sa cha pane de vichare cha laha kata jagato le cha o dara dara de firane nalo sat guru de darte de cha O dande sabjute chadke laha kate jagato leja. Tera tera kenda etu sukanda salenda etu. Tera tera kenda etu sukanda salenda etu. Rasada juta chadke sajna sache rasate pecha laha kata jagato leja. O dada dada de firane nalo, Sati guru de dada te deja. O dande sabjute chadke, laha kata jagato leja. Jo visharna guru diave muho mangiya muranda pave. Jo visharna guru diave muho mangiya muranda pave. Chadke jute jagre sare guru sharan vichape ja. Laha kata jagato leja. O dada dada de firane nalo. Satguru de darte decha. O dande sab jute chadke lahakat jagato leja. Achai basacha pyar hona lab jai kirpal sona. Achai basacha pyar hona lab jai kirpal sona. Sach sat guru mil gaya sat guru di sharani peja laha kat jagato leja. O dar dar de pirne na lo sat guru de dar te teja. O dande sab jute chadke laha kat jagato leja.
Oh, Jeb, if you have true love, you meet beautiful Kapal. You have got the true Satguru. Take refuge in him. Instead of wandering to door after door, fall at the door of Satguru. All the business of this world is false. Give it up, earn the profit, and take it. Can everyone hear me all right? Is it okay? Okay. I want to begin this morning by reading the climax of what, in my opinion, was Kripal's masterpiece of a book, The Crown of Life. And this is chapter 8, called Conclusion. And of course, the book, he refers to what came before it in the book, but it's not absolutely necessary or even important to know what's in the rest of the book in order to understand what he's saying here. This is, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we read a letter from Baba Sawan Singh, in which the whole psychology and science of the path is expressed so magnificently. In my opinion, this chapter falls alongside of that. It is a very, very basic writing in connection with the path. So Master Kripal says, the foregoing survey, in brief, of the major religions of the world and some of their modern ramifications makes abundantly clear a general drift towards some common basic assumptions and beliefs. A, that the physical universe is no more than a small part of a much larger whole. B, that in like manner our everyday human existence is only a fragment of the vast and complex pattern of life. C, that behind the phenomenal physical and human world there is an absolute reality or a state of perfect being beyond change or destruction, complete within itself, which is responsible for all that is and yet stands over and above its own creation. D, that this reality, this state of perfect being, may be approached by man under competent guidance through the agency of the Word, or the divine stream radiating light and harmony, which represent the primal manifestations of the formless into form, and from whose downward descent all realms and regions came into existence. If all religious experience tends in the same direction, then why, one asks, is there so much of conflict and controversy in the sphere of religion? Why is it that the devotees of every faith regard theirs as the only true one and all other faiths as false? Why is there dogmatic faith and spiritual monopoly, and wherefore the Holy Crusades, the massacre of St. Bartholomew, the Spanish Inquisition, or the communal riotings in India in 1947? The question is a valid one, and the reasons that must go toward answering it are many and complex. The first thing that strikes one when taking up the comparative study of religion is its existence on different levels. At the core of every major religion stands the practical, mystical experience of some great sage or a succession of sages. Around this center have accumulated accretions of social codes, customs, and ritual. Now, the core may be common to the mystics of various ages and countries, but the social context in which it is experienced and conveyed must of necessity vary. The Westerner bears his head as a mark of reverence, while the Oriental covers it. A Hindu, belonging to a land with many rivers and abundant water, bathes before his prayers, while his Muslim counterpart, coming from the deserts of Arabia, is satisfied with a dry bath with sand. The European, living as he does in the colder regions, feels neither of these compulsions. Such differences of custom extend to other spheres as well. Polygamy may be lawful to the Muslim, but it is a rank sin to the Catholic. Idol worship may be quite permissible in Hinduism, but is hateful to the Puritan. The fact is that all religious leaders have stressed the need for maintaining high ethical standards, but their ethic has never been of the nature of an absolute. They have taken into account the social conditions obtaining among the people at the times at which they came, and have tried to raise them to the highest possible point, aiming not so much at a standardization of outer custom as at inner purity of heart and goodwill toward one's human and non-human fellow creatures. Jesus' immediate listeners may have failed to appreciate the truth of his assertion that he had come not to break but to fulfill the law. And yet if Moses gave out the precept of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, Christ taught his disciples to love their enemies and to offer their right cheek when the left was slapped. Moses spoke according to the conditions of his time, and Jesus according to his own. So the ethics of Christianity deviated from those of Judaism, even though it is an extension of the older faith. As a consequence of the factors that came into play in the development of religion as a social institution, we find that each religion creates around itself a distinct pattern of customs, dogmas, and ritual. This pattern being distinct in each case, the devotees of every faith must necessarily feel themselves as standing apart from those of other faiths, not only in their dress and manners, but also in their modes of social concepts and attitudes. Yet the lives of all great religious leaders, like Jesus and Buddha, reveal that while each of them accepted and extended the code of his own people, they nonetheless never forgot that all men were brothers and treated members of other societies with the same respect and consideration as they displayed to those of their own. Behind the varying outer forms that characterize life, they saw pulsating the same unity of being, and it was from this level that they regarded all humanity. What was possible to the great founders of religions should be possible for those who claim to follow them. But when we look at things as they stand, we find that this possibility of intercommunication, cooperation, and understanding between various faiths has seldom, if ever, been realized. A mystic like Sri Ramakrishna may practically demonstrate the inner oneness of all religions, but the rest of us fail to grasp the point. And Master has a footnote, Sri Ramakrishna, to test the truth that all religions lead to the same spiritual goal, practiced in turn the outer and inner disciplines of Hinduism, Christianity, and Islam, and in each case he found the end reached was the same. The fact is that every major world religion, after the passing away of its founder, grew into an institution with a priesthood to manage its affairs. The pundits in India, the mullahs and maulvis in Islam, the Pharisees and rabbis in Judaism, and the monks and bishops in Christianity. This development made possible the extension of the message of the great founders to numbers they could never have instructed themselves. Buddha personally met and influenced many an individual, but what was their number in comparison to the millions that heard the doctrine of Dharma when Ashoka created the various sanghas or orders of Buddhist monks 2 centuries after his death? Besides, it enabled the perpetuation of his message down the ages. Buddha has come and gone. Jesus may have been immolated on the cross, but the Sangha and the Church continue and keep alive their teachings in a widespread manner, which could not have been done if no such institutions had been developed. But if the institutionalization of the teachings of great spiritual leaders enabled their propagation and perpetuation, it also led to their transformation. The message of Christ or of Buddha, as it was first delivered by each of them, was one thing, but in the hands of the Church and Sangha that followed, it became another. The great religious leaders were moved and guided by first-hand inner experience, and it was this actuality that lay at the heart of their teachings. They saw it as something universal, something latent in every human being, and it was toward this that they directed the attention of their disciples, employing ethical advancement as a lever for spiritual progress. When their task, after their passing away, was taken over by rapidly expanding organizations, which grew more complex with time, one could not expect all of their members to have attained the same heights or even to have any glimpses of the inner mystic realms. Little wonder, then, that with the growth of the Church and the like, the interest in every religion should have tended to shift from the mystical to the ethical, the ritualistic, and the doctrinal. In short, from the universal to the particular. Only a rare soul may penetrate through the dark veil within. But for every such being, a million, nay, a billion, may discuss problems of ethics, practice outer ceremonies, and hold strong opinions on various subjects, opinions not inspired or tested by personal experience, but picked up from the marketplace of life. And so, whereas we find no framework of ritual or doctrine or outer code in the teachings of Jesus himself, everything being fluid and flexible in a ready state to be directed to the service of the mystical message, a rigid framework emerged with the growth of the Christian Church. As this variation took place, new barriers arose between the followers of Jesus and those of other faiths, barriers that never existed before. As though this were not enough, the rise of priestcraft worked in yet another direction. The church, in its phase of growth, had in most cases to struggle against heavy odds, as everything new usually meets with strong opposition. It could only offer the cross of danger and deprivation, not the rose of prosperity. Those who entered it for the sake of their convictions, not for love of power. But once the church had come to be accepted, it began to exercise considerable sway over the people. They offered it gifts and titles and made it the final arbiter, not only in matters spiritual, but in matters temporal as well. Thus began a process by which the priesthood turned from the inner to the outer life, from self-abnegation to temporal power. In order to preserve its position, the church encouraged the growth of doctrines and traditions that reinforced its monopoly of authority. To strengthen itself, it created a halo around the altar to which it was in service, and condemned the altars where it had no hand. If the self-styled servants of Jehovah, or those of some other name of deity, were to maintain and extend their position and sway, then it was necessary that all gods of the Philistines or of the heathen should be condemned. These factors that we have considered operate in every field of human activity. The historian is only too well aware of the fate of every new movement, whether of a religious or of a secular character. It arises with a man of vision, undergoes rapid expansion in the hands of those whom his example has directly inspired, and then enters into a process of gradual senility and decay. The descent from a pulsating vision to a mechanical dogma is not peculiar to religion alone. But nevertheless, there are certain features in the case of religion which do not occur elsewhere. These unique problems stem from the mystical experience at the heart of every great religion. The mystic experience, as we have seen, extends to planes of existence to which normally human beings have no access. Only a handful, nay, less than a handful, can claim its mastery in any age. It is an experience unique in character, for it possesses a kind of richness, extensiveness, intensity, and beauty that finds no parallel in earthly life. But we on this earthly plane can comprehend its meaning only within the limitations of our own mundane experience. The choice before the mystic, if he wishes to convey to us something of his unique experience, not just ending in silence or in the negative statements of the Vedantist or of St. John of the Cross, is perforce to resort to metaphor and parable. In Maulana Rumi's Masnavi, we are told, "It is not fitting that I tell thee more, for the stream's bed cannot hold the sea." Jesus was quite explicit on the subject when speaking to his closest disciples, to whom he could directly convey firsthand inner experience. "Unto you it is given to know the mystery of the kingdom of God, but unto those that are without, all things are done in parables." St. Mark. Whereas direct statements tend to be limited by the analyzable qualities of the object, figurative statement suffers no such bar. Poets have described their love for a woman in terms of a rose, a star, a melody, a flame, the moon, etc. The mystics have used a similar license when speaking of their love for God. But while the listeners to the poet speaking of human love are always aware that he is using metaphors, knowing well what a woman is, those hearing the mystic have no such comparison and often tend to forget that what he is saying is only figurative. So the statements of the man of spiritual vision are often taken literally when they are meant to be only metaphorical, and metaphorically when they are meant to be literal. Thus, when Jesus or Muhammad declared that he was the Son or the Messiah of God, as all great souls who have merged their will with the divine will have said, they were each taken to imply that he was literally the only Son of the Almighty. Or again, when Jesus, speaking not in his capacity as a finite individual, but in that of the eternal divine principle that he embodied, said, "I shall never leave thee nor forsake thee, even to the ends of the world," he was taken literally. So to seek active spiritual guidance from a living teacher after Jesus was no more became a sign of disbelief, and therefore was dubbed a heresy. But when Jesus quite literally spoke of the single eye, or of God as light, he was taken to refer figuratively to integrity of conscience and the light of reason. Little wonder, then, that with each statement being thus interpreted, or rather misinterpreted, meanings should emerge which the sage who made them never had in mind, and dogmas and doctrines should be propounded in his name, which have little relation to the universal inner experiences which inspired him. So differences of doctrine between one creed and another arose that were never in the contemplation of their founders. Moreover, the inner realms are so vast and varied that no one mystic could ever hope to point to all aspects of the inner panorama. At best, he can hint at some part of it, and that may not be exactly the same as those parts of which others have spoken, with the result that to the reader who has himself no direct access to the realms within, there may appear certain discrepancies between the writings of one mystic and another, which, in fact, do not exist. Further, not all mystics reach the highest spiritual goal. Only a few succeed in breaking through the veil of inner darkness to the full, and of these, the majority never get beyond the first inner spiritual plane. Of those who do succeed in going further, the greater number never cross the second plane, and so on. Now, each of the planes has its own peculiarities and characteristics, and whereas the higher planes contain and maintain the lower ones, the inhabitants of the lower planes are seldom aware of the existence of the higher ones. Each plane, in comparison to the one before it, seems perfection itself. And every mystic who has spoken of his divine experience has described it as though it were the be-all and the end-all of spiritual progress. The inescapable consequence of this is that we encounter descriptions of the Absolute that, after an allowance for differences of figurative language has been made, fail to agree. Jesus speaks of the divine in its paternal aspect, Sri Ramakrishna in its maternal one. The Shankhya mystics speak of God, Prakriti, and Atman as forever separate, Ramanuja as related but never merging into one, while Shankara sees them as of the self-same essence, their separation being not real but only an illusion. All this means a mass of confusion to the common reader. But should he meet one who has reached the highest realm and is familiar with the experience of each of the inner planes, all contradictions would vanish, for he can demonstrate that though the six blind men made apparently the most contradictory statements about the nature of the elephant, yet they could all be finally reconciled by one who could see the whole elephant. In this context, the teachings of the Surat Shabad Yoga acquire yet another significance. We have already seen at some length how it represents the quickest, most practical, and the most scientific means to man's spiritual goal. We may now add that by taking him to the highest of the spiritual planes, the point where the formless comes into form. It provides him with the best vantage ground for viewing the vast field of spirituality. That which would confuse and baffle others leaves the adept on this path unruffled. Contradictions vanish at his touch, and that which once confused and confounded resolves itself after his exposition into perfect order. He understands each of the spiritual and quasi-spiritual movements that confront us today. He can at will enter into the inner experience that each can offer, and he is the best fitted to judge their relative merits. He does not condemn or attack. He is not moved by hatred or opposition. Having seen the highest, his aim is to take his fellow human beings to it in the smoothest, swiftest way. He knows that the life within is not to be confounded with the life without, and preaches his message not as a code, but as a science. Try within, he tells us, and see for yourself. The science he teaches is not a new one. It is the most ancient of sciences. But whereas in the past it tended to ally itself to much that was not essential to it, he wishes to preserve it in its pure state and pristine glory. He carries to their logical conclusion the mystic truths embedded in all great scriptures, stressing that if God in his primal form is light and music, we must inwardly turn to these and not to any other means for reaching back to him and merging with him. Where there was chaos, he brings order. Where there was despair, he brings hope. And for each of us, in whatever capacity we may be, he has some comfort, some illumination to offer. And this is a letter from Baba Sawan Singh, which I have found very helpful. Letter number 72 from Spiritual Gems. He says, people on other planes are not much interested in the physical plane. They have their hands full there in their own doings. The karmic law is supreme on the material and the mind planes, and nothing happens of its own accord, spontaneously, so to say. The law governs the planes. Therefore, no haphazard happening of events takes place anywhere, whether the events are of microscopic or astronomical dimensions. In peace and in cataclysms or catastrophes, only they suffer who are destined to suffer. All that has been created is bound to change and decay. There is dissolution of earth, planets, sun, and stars, but at very long intervals, too long for human conception. Who can say when this present planetary system was created? Prophets, yogis, and astronomers give their estimates, and the latter revise their estimates with every new discovery. But who can say how often this dissolution has been repeated? Only he who creates knows it. Suffice it to say that for human beings sitting outside the eye center, the time is infinitely long since the creation came into being and when it will disappear again. So there is nothing to worry about the next war or the atom bomb. This very kind of loose, vague talk was indulged in during and at the end of Great War I, and is also indulged in after floods, earthquakes, famines, and plagues. The worry should be about one's entry into the eye center and meeting the radiant form of the Master, so that the Master is our companion, on whom reliance can be placed here and hereafter. He who has been connected with the Word cannot go amiss in catastrophe or peace. He has a place to go to, goes there, and is not lost. This is a meditation talk from Sanchi, which he gave when he put us into meditation on May 26, 1988 in New York City. And many of us will remember that extremely beautiful and charged up session when he came, he left South America and came to New York and did a one-day program there for North Americans. And people came from all over the country. You know, it was a very, very powerful time. And the meditation was powerful, the satsang was powerful. It was just an absolutely marvelous time. And this is a talk that Sanchi gave before meditation. And it seems to me that this is called When We Do Simran Lovingly. And the longer I live and the more I meditate and the more I talk with people who have problems in meditation, the more it seems to me that this is the essence of the whole thing. When we do Simran lovingly. Sanchi says, make the mind quiet as only quiet minds can meditate. Don't understand meditation as a burden. Do it lovingly. While meditating, don't pay any attention to the outer sounds. Don't allow your mind to wander outside. Concentrate at the eye center. When we do the Simran lovingly, keeping our attention at the eye center, the streams of the lower forces which are pulling our soul down become weaker, and one by one those forces, you can even call them the chains of the forces of the mind, start breaking by themselves, and they free our soul. When we do the Simran lovingly, keeping our attention at the eye center, we rise above the level of mind and the organs of sense, and our soul becomes free from the forces of the mind. When we are doing the Simran, our soul is being pulled down by all these negative forces or streams, and that is why we are not able to remain at the eye center. But when we make the habit of remaining at the eye center, and when we do the Simran lovingly, then our soul also rises above, and the middle of our soul brightens up. It becomes bright, and we can see a very beautiful, very bright light within. Then we can remain at the eye center for a longer time. Right now, because we are not doing the Simran lovingly, and not keeping our attention at the eye center, our attention drops down, and the worldly thoughts bother us a lot. But when we do the Simran lovingly, keeping ourselves at the eye center, and one by one, all the worldly thoughts go away from our within, and in their place comes Simran. Now we may hear the Shabad, but that Shabad is not pulling us up, because our soul is not at the eye center. Our soul, our attention, is wandering here and there below in the body. And because he is being pulled down by the lower forces, lust, anger, greed, attachment, and egoism, that is why she is not being pulled up even though we may hear the Shabad. Only when iron is placed in the range of a magnet will that magnet pull it towards itself. If the piece of iron is not in the range of the magnet, or if it is rusted, then what is the fault of the magnet? The magnet has the power, But since the iron is not purified and it is not placed in the range of the magnet, it is not being attracted by the magnet. In the same way, when our soul is not purified, when our soul is not in the range of the Shabad, how can the Shabad pull it up? We may hear the Shabad, but because our soul is still down in our body, the Shabad does not pull us up. So it is very important to keep ourselves at the eye center and do our Simran devotedly and lovingly. Satsangis should not miss the regularity, because in regularity is the prosperity. If we miss meditation even for one day, it takes us 3 days or more to meditate and fill up that gap. Because even if we meditate for 4 or 5 hours daily, still, because we think about the world a lot, the worldly portion is much more. That is why the satsangi should make a habit of regularity in their meditation. Even if it is only a little, it doesn't matter, but they should be regular in meditation. Satsangi should be very careful with their mind. They should live their life differently than the lives of worldly people. You should know that this is the last chance. This is the last time that you have come into this suffering world, and with the grace of the Master, you have to go back to your real home. That is why satsangi should always be very careful with and always keep a strong guard against their mind. Master Kripal graciously gave us the diary to fill up. It is the best way to keep a strong guard against the mind and to introspect yourselves. So you have to do your Simran lovingly. Don't bring any worldly thoughts in front of you while doing the Simran. And Master Kripal used to say a couple of things. One was that love is the grease that makes possible, that makes the very narrow tube that we have to pass through possible to pass through. And the second is that when meditation should be like a child above its mother, it sees its mother below and it dives into her lap. That is what we are doing when we meditate. We are diving into our mother's lap. And the same love, the same total and complete trust, the same understanding of the relation between the child and the mother that the child has, all of that should be ours when we sit for meditation. That is what is happening. It's a, you know, the path is such an enormous thing, is such a great, great thing, and it's so easy to minimize it. You know, part of what Master was saying in the chapter from the Crown of Life that we read has to do with translating, reducing the tremendous reality of what the Masters give us to something that our minds can comprehend and feel comfortable with. And it's natural to want to do that, but we should realize that there's a great deal that is lost when we do it. You know, that there is no way that we can comprehend the tremendousness of what the Masters have to give and what is involved in their giving it, and how important it is that we approach all that with all the love that we are capable of. When Jesus said, quoting Moses, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength," and the second is like unto it, "Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself," this is what he was talking about. This is what the path is all about. Master Kripal quoted those two statements, which is actually one statement, although in the Bible and the Old Testament, they are found in two different places, but Jesus put them together as one basic commandment. Master quoted that very, very, very often. You find it everywhere in his writings, those two statements. And this is what, when we sit for meditation, you know, this is what we are doing. We are loving God with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our strength. And the result of that is not only that we go within during meditation, but that we find that we love our neighbor as ourselves, because we see very, very clearly that our neighbor is ourself. There is no difference. If we go deep enough within, we see that. The masters have told countless parables to make this point. That is why, you know, it's, as you said, anybody, very few people can actually go within, but everybody can have, among other things, strong opinions on various subjects. We all do, you know. And we are totally attached to those opinions. And we are totally convinced that we are right and everybody else is wrong. And all the master can do is say, go within and you will see that how all of this fits together. And that is it. You know, a Hasidic rabbi, very famous Jewish mystic named Moses Cordovero, once spoke about the inner planes, how we think of God in certain ways and so forth, and we have our own conceptions of heaven. But when we actually get there, we find that it's like nothing we can possibly comprehend. And then we go to the next plane, and it's like a mustard seed in the middle of the moon. The physical plane was like that to the astral was like that to the causal, and so forth. And Tulsi Saab said, you know, that when he got to the causal plane, he thought it was the highest of all and the most beautiful and the most magnificent possible plane. And then he went past one plane and he thought that the causal plane was like a washroom. So it's like that, you know. That's what the masters come to give us, is the ability to experience this, to realize it, to understand what they are saying, to make their priorities our priority, to care about loving God with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our strength, and to care about loving our neighbor as ourself, and to make this life that we have been given make sense. If Sanchi says in one bhajan, make our life interesting, really, really, really interesting. You know, that's what the master gives us, is the ability and the way to do that. So it's no, you know, it's no small thing. And yet it's so easy, you know. We think the path can become like any other spiritual endeavor. The path can become a religion. It can become, we can think, well, I have to do meditation. I have this. When Sanchi says, don't understand it as a burden, he means, you know, it has nothing to do with anything like that, with I have to do this or this or that. It's because in our heart of hearts, we want to do it with all the love that is at our command, because this is what we were born to do. And that is there for us to see and for us to make use of and for us to make real. And that's the tremendous beauty of the universe. You know, Rabia said that love is the core of the universe. In the world we live in, that's very hard to understand and to see, because the world we live in seems like anything but loving. You know, people hate each other. People, with their strong opinions, attack each other. People do all kinds of things to each other. And it seems irrevocable. You know, this is the way the world has always been. And it's the way the world will always be, we think. But if we go within, you know, we can see the love that is the core of the universe that's really there and that has mercy and love on all of those people that are doing all those things, because the loving absolute divine can look into the heart of each of those people and understand why they are doing what they are doing and forgive them. This is the meaning of the famous story that Sanchi tells in The Rescue, Chapter 8, when King Janak released all the souls from hell. You know, there they were. They were there suffering from their karma, and these were not nice people, you know. To be in hell for any period of time, instead of being born again into one body or another in the physical plane, means that your karma is very, very heavy, which means that you did some very, very nasty things to earn it. And all the people that we turn away from in disgust, all the people that we feel total, complete revulsion about, they're the ones that were in hell. And King Janak's attitude was only that of love for them. And he wanted to release them. He wanted to forgive them. Because he was the embodiment of the love that is at the core of the universe. And he did it. And he did it with one little bit of the Simran that he had done lovingly all his life. And that is why, you know, it's like love drowns out the karma that we have to undergo. And as long as, you know, the physical body is in existence, it's governed by the fate karma that brought us into this world. And there's no way around that. But the love that is at the core of the universe is ours to grab onto and to make a part of ourselves. And that enables us, as Master says, to, you know, for it to lose its pinching effect. It happens. But if we can, at the same time that it happens, if we can recognize the love that is behind it, that is there, you know, it can make all the difference in the world. But beyond and behind all that, it's the simple, simple fact that what the Master has come to do is to take us all back home as fast as possible. And to do that, you know, he has given us that which we need to do it. And the opportunity is ours. It's there. We can make use of it or not. You know, if we put our attention, which is us, our attention is our soul. The Masters have made that very plain. Sanchi just said it in the talk we just read. If we can do that, if we care about what the Master says, if we trust in him and put our whole attention into the practices which he gives us, what can we not do? We can become that which he is. And when Judith and I were in India the first time in 1965, we had a little room in the back of the guest house on the bottom floor. When I went back 4 years later, it was no longer there. That old building had been remodeled. But the door did not come up to the top of the door jamb, so there was a space and we could hear everything that was going on in the room next to us. And most of it I would rather have not heard. I didn't care about it. But one time we heard Master in there talking to somebody, and I don't remember any of the rest of the conversation, but he said very plainly at one point, I want you to be a Buddha, not a Buddhist. I want you to be a Buddha, not a Buddhist. And that is the point of the path, you know, is not to become Buddhists or Christians or whatever, but to become Buddhas or Christs. That is what the Master has to give, you know, and that is an option for us. We may or may not make it, you know, within the confines of this particular physical life, but that is what is the goal. Not to become a member of a religion, but to become one with the founders of the religions, and which is what the Master is. And he is interested in making us like him. He's not jealous, you know, if we become very spiritually advanced. It doesn't make him unhappy, it makes him happy. He's very pleased for us, because we are becoming like him. So when Sanchi says, do the Simran lovingly, you know, to me that's such an enormously important thing. And I know from what people have told me over the years that many people do not understand this. You know, they want more experiences than they have. They are totally tied up with the fact that they don't have experiences the way they ought to have them. This and that happens. They become irregular. They sit less than 2 hours a day, etc., etc., etc. And all of that, you know, falls into nothingness. It doesn't matter what experiences we have. If we sit lovingly and our attention is contracted into the eye focus, we will have so much pleasure that we can't believe it. And experiences will come of their own when that happens. You know, this is why Master says, don't do the work of an overseer. Anyway, that's what Sanchi's talk, which I was there when he gave that talk in New York City, and I remember that meditation sitting very well. It's a very, very beautiful and powerful time. We had come with him from South America. We had been with him in Colombia, which was also a very powerful time. That's another thing. Okay, we are starting a new tape today. This is called The Washerman's Daughter, which is my favorite story, one of my favorite stories. I have a lot of them, but that's one of them, which Sanchi told many times. And I will never forget in Rajasthan one time how he identified himself with the washerman's daughter, which struck me as somehow very mind-blowing. Anyway, this was given in France on June 13th, 1994, another very powerful and loving time where I was at there also.
ਜਿਨ੍ਹਾਂ ਨੇ ਇਸ ਗਰੀਬ ਆਤਮਾ ਤੇ ਬੜੀ ਭਾਰੀ ਦਇਆ ਕੀਤੀ, ਇਸ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਦਇਆ ਕੀਤੀ ਕਿ ਜਿਵੇਂ ਰਵੀਦਾਸ ਨੇ ਧੋਬੀਆਂ ਦੀ ਲੜਕੀ ਤੇ ਕੀਤੀ, ਗਗਨੌਰ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਰਾਜਾ ਪੀਪਾ ਅੱਛਾ ਆਪਦੇ ਰਾਜ ਮਹਿਲਾਂ ਵਿੱਚ ਰਹਿ ਰਿਹਾ ਸੀਗਾ। ਜਦ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਦਾ ਸ਼ੌਕ ਪੈਦਾ ਹੁੰਦਾ, ਮੈਂ ਦੱਸਦਾ ਹੁੰਦਾ, ਨਾ ਤਾਂ ਅਸੀਂ ਆਤਮਾ ਤੇ ਗਰੀਬੀ ਦਾ ਕੋਈ ਅਸਰ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ, ਨਾ ਅਮੀਰੀ ਦਾ ਹੀ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ। ਜਿਸ ਮਕਸਦ ਨੂੰ ਐਸੀਆਂ ਪਵਿੱਤਰ ਆਤਮਾ ਆਉਂਦੀਆਂ ਹਨ, ਉਹੀ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਅੱਖਾਂ ਅੱਗੇ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ। ਸ਼ਾਹ ਬਲਖ ਬੁਖਾਰੇ ਨੂੰ ਜਦ ਪਰਮਾਰਥ ਦਾ ਸ਼ੌਕ ਪੈਦਾ ਹੋਇਆ, ਆਪਣੀ ਬਾਦਸ਼ਾਹੀ ਛੱਡ ਕੇ ਹਿੰਦੁਸਤਾਨ ਚ ਜਾ ਕੇ ਕਬੀਰ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਦੇ 12 ਸਾਲ ਬੂਹੇ ਤੇ ਝਾੜੂ ਕੱਢਿਆ, ਤਾਣੀ ਵਿੱਚ ਹੱਥ ਵਟਾਉਂਦੇ ਰਹੇ, ਫੇਰ ਜਾ ਕੇ ਨਾਮ ਪ੍ਰਾਪਤ ਕੀਤਾ ਸੀ।
I bow down at the feet of my beloved Gurudev, Lord Almighty Savan and Kripal, who have showered limitless grace upon this poor soul. They showered so much grace upon me, and in the way the grace was showered on the washerman's daughter by Guru Ravidas, in the same way my beloved masters have showered grace upon me. King Pipa was living in Gagnaur. He was the king of Gagnaur, and he was a very good king. He was living very comfortably in his palace. But when the desire to do the devotion of Lord was created within him, because he was a good soul, and often I have said that such souls up within whom the desire to do the devotion of Lord is created, they are never affected by the poverty or the richness. For them it doesn't make any difference if they are poor or rich. So just like when the king of Balak Bukhara got the yearning to do the devotion of Lord, he gave up his kingdom of Balak Bukhara. He came down to India, went to Kabir Sahib, and for 12 years he cleaned the house of Kabir Sahib with the broom, and he also helped him in weaving the cloth. And after serving Kabir Sahib for 12 long years, and after giving up his kingdom, he was able to get the initiation from Kabir Sahib.
Raja Pipa ghar andar mandir banaya si ga roz devte di puja karda si ga lekin jab barish honi hundi hai asman vich badal ho jande hai awaz gayi bhi aave ki pipa pura guru tund nahi ta kaal badi zabardast taakat hai ਉਹ ਖਲ ਨਿਕਾਲ ਦਿੰਦਾ ਹੈ ਬਗੈਰ ਅਗਰ ਗੁਰੂ ਤੋਂ ਕੋਈ ਆਤਮਾ ਮਿਲ ਜਾਂਦੀ ਹੈ ਤਾਂ ਉਹ ਗਿਣ ਗਿਣ ਕੇ ਉਸ ਤੋਂ ਹਿਸਾਬ ਲੈਂਦਾ ਹੈ
ਕਿੰਗ ਪੀਪਾ ਹੈਡ ਮੇਡ ਅ ਟੈਂਪਲ ਇਨ ਹਿਸ ਪੈਲਸ ਐਂਡ ਹੀ ਯੂਜ਼ ਟੂ ਵਰਸ਼ਿਪ ਦੀ ਆਈਡਲਸ ਇਨ ਦ ਟੈਂਪਲ ਯੂ ਨੋ ਦੈਟ ਵੈਨ ਇਟ ਇਜ਼ ਅਬਾਊਟ ਟੂ ਰੇਨ ਦ ਕਲਾਊਡਸ ਫਾਰਮ ਇਨ ਦ ਸਕਾਈ ਐਂਡ ਦੈਨ ਵੀ ਆਰ ਸ਼ੋਰ ਦੈਟ ਇਟ ਇਜ਼ ਗੋਇੰਗ ਟੂ ਰੇਨ ਇਨ ਦ ਸੇਮ ਵੇ ਵੈਨ ਦ ਟਾਈਮ ਆਫ ਅਵਰ ਮੀਟਿੰਗ ਵਿਦ ਦ ਪਰਫੈਕਟ ਮਾਸਟਰ ਅਪਰੋਚਿਸ we also get the sign. So King Pipa, even though he used to worship the idols in the temple which he had made, he was doing that, but a hidden voice, a divine voice started coming to him, which said that, oh Pipa, you look for the perfect master, because negative power is such a power that if he meets any soul who doesn't have the protection of the perfect master, that soul doesn't get forgiven by the negative power, and the negative power tortures that soul. He even deskins the soul. So in order to save yourself from that, you go and look for the perfect master.
Raja Pipa ne aapde jitne vi salahkar san rajkaaj de vich madad karde si sab nu bulaya ki is vele koi pura mahatma hai. ਸਭ ਨੇ ਕਿਹਾ ਕਿ ਕਬੀਰ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਤੋਂ ਸੰਸਾਰ 'ਚ ਜਾ ਚੁੱਕੇ ਹੈ, ਰਵੀਦਾਸ ਮਹਾਤਮਾ ਹੈ, ਉਹ ਪੂਰਨ ਹੈ, ਉਹ ਨਾਮ ਨਾਲ ਜੋੜ ਸਕਦਾ ਹੈ, ਪਰ ਉਹ ਚਮਾਰ ਜਾਤੀ ਦਾ ਹੈ. ਸਾਨੂੰ ਪਤਾ ਹੀ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਮਨ ਜਿਹੜਾ ਹੈ ਇਹ ਕਾਲ ਦਾ ਏਜੰਟ ਹੈ, ਕੋਈ ਵੀ ਮੌਕਾ ਆਪਦੇ ਹੱਥ ਵਿੱਚੋਂ ਜਾਣ ਨਹੀਂ ਦਿੰਦਾ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਗਾ. ਇਹਦੀ ਡਿਊਟੀ ਕਾਲ ਨੇ ਇਹੀ ਲਾਈ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਕੋਈ ਆਤਮਾ ਗੁਰੂ ਭਗਤੀ ਨਾ ਕਰਨੇ ਪਾਏ, ਆਪਦੇ ਘਰ ਵਾਪਸ ਸੱਚਖੰਡ ਦੀ ਤਿਆਰੀ ਨਾ ਕਰ ਲਵੇ. ਅਨੇਕਾਂ ਕਿਸਮ ਦੇ ਇਹ ਜਦ ਅਸੀਂ ਨਾਮਦਾਨ ਦੀ ਤਿਆਰੀ ਕਰਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਵਿਘਨ ਖੜੇ ਕਰ ਦਿੰਦਾ ਹੈ.
ਸੋ ਕਿੰਗ ਪੀਪਾ ਕਾਲਡ ਹਿਸ ਕਾਉਂਸਲਰਸ ਐਂਡ ਦ ਪੀਪਲ ਹੂ ਯੂਜ਼ ਟੂ ਹੈਲਪ ਹਿਮ ਇਨ ਰੂਲਿੰਗ ਦ ਕਿੰਗਡਮ ਐਂਡ ਆਸਕਡ ਦੈਮ ਇਫ ਦੇਰ ਵਾਜ਼ ਐਨੀ ਪਰਫੈਕਟ ਮਾਸਟਰ ਅਵੇਲੇਬਲ ਐਟ ਦੈਟ ਟਾਈਮ. So they replied that Kabir Sahib has left the body and he was the perfect master, and after him Guru Ravidas is the perfect master, but he is a cobbler and he belongs to a low caste. Often I have said that mind is an agent of negative power, and he often creates many obstacles and hindrances when we come to the masters, when we go for the holy initiation. And he doesn't want any opportunity, he doesn't want to lose any opportunity. That is why he creates the doubts, he creates so many hurdles when we are about to come to the Master.
मन ने इंद्र परम खड़े करने शुरू किए कि तू क्षत्रिय राजपूत है, एक चमार जाके गुरु धारण करें, हो सकता तेरी पब्लिक तेरे ते रेजित खराब हो जावे, कोई ऐसा मौका मिले कि जब किसी नु पता ना लगे मैं जाके ओना तो जो पूछना पूछावा। एक दिन कुदरत तो ही गंगा दा पर्व लग्या होया सी, सारी प्रजा जड़ी सी उधर गंगा दे इनान में जा रही सी, बड़ा अच्छा मौका मिलया। उधर रविदास जी कल्ले घर अंदर कुंड पानी कढ़ के टेंड विच पा रहे सीगे, दिल च दया उठी महात्मा दे कि एक राजा होके मेरे पास आया है, इनू कोई अच्छा तोहफा देवा। ये भी याद रखे कि किसी महात्मा कोले गया सीगा, वो कहन लगे राजा कार बुक हुण ओ मन जिहड़ा है वो साथ नहीं छड़दा गा, मन ने अंदर परम पैदा कीता कि ये चमार जाति दा है, अगर ये हाथ दा पानी पी लिया तू चमार बन जाएगा। महात्मा दा रोह भी हुंदा है, उसने की कीता हाथ आपदे बुक कर दिते, पानी पीने लग्या, लेकिन खुलियां बाहां वाला जैसा कि कुर्ता है इस तरह का सीगा, उन्हें पानी संग दे अगे नहीं लगाया, सारा ही नीचे गेरी गया। दिल च ख्याल आया करे के तोबी नू बुलाया के खड़े काट भी धोखे लिया, किसी नू पता भी ना लगे। दिल च वार वार ख्याल करता है कि मैनू इसने चमार ही बना देना सीगा। तोबी ने पट्ठी तैयार कीती, कायदा यह हुंदा है कि तोबी लोग अगर कोई दाग ऐसा होवे तो वो चूस के उस नीचे गेर दिंदे है थुक नू। वो नाबालक छोटी बच्ची सी, आप पट्ठी तैयार करन लग्या, उस नू वो दाग चूसन वास्ते कह दिता। वो लड़की जड़ी पानी सीगा थुक सीगा वो अंदर नगाउंदी रही, हुण वो परम संत दे हत्थां दा दया दा पानी सीगा। जिवें जिवें ओहदे अंदर ओ थुक नगाउंदी गई, ओहदे पर्दे खुल पर्दा खुल गया, ज्ञान ध्यान दी बात करन लगी। आसे पासे पता लग्या कि धोबियां दे करे एक बड़ी अच्छी आत्मा लड़की दे रूप विच है, बड़ी महात्मा है। हुण राजे ने जद सुनिया, परमार दा शौक सी, रात नूं गया, लड़की देख के खड़ी हो गई हाथ जोड़ के। राजा कहन लग्या देख बेटी, मैं तेनू धोबियां दी लड़की समझ के नहीं आया, मैं एक महात्मा समझ के तेरे दर ते आया है। वो कहन लगी मैं तेनू राजा समझ के नहीं खड़ी हुई, मैं जो कुछ मिलिया वो ते इथो ही मिलिया है। वो हैरान हो गया कि मैं इथो किस तरह मिलिया है। वो कहन लगी कि जो राज सी हकीकत सी सच्चाई सी वो तेरे कुर्ते दे अंदर ही सी। सो जदों मन नूं आपदे घाटे दा भी पता लग जांदा है तो भजिया रविदास दे घर दी तरफ कि महात्मा जी गलती हो गई, हुण मैनूं उह वस्तु दिओ। रविदास जी कहण लगे देख भी राजा, उह तां उस वक्त मौज सी, उह पाणी नहीं सी, उह सचखंड तों आया होया अमृत सी। मैं सोचिया कि राजा होके मेरे पास आया है, इहनूं अच्छी तों अच्छी वस्तु देवां। हुण तेनू नाम दे दिने हैं, तू कमाई कर। हुण जिहड़े पवित्र आत्मा हुंदियां हन ओ नाम लेके, ए नहीं कि उस नू जपण ना, ओने खूब शब्द नाम दी कमाई कीती, आखर परम गति नू प्राप्त आया होया। गुरु ग्रंथ साहिब दे विच ओना महात्मा दी बाणी है जिन्हां ने परम गति प्राप्त कीती सी, पीपे दा वी शब्द हैगे।
So King Pipa's mind started creating doubts in him, and he started convincing him that you are a king belonging to the Kshatriya caste, which is the highest caste, and if you will go to a cobbler and if you will take him as your master, what will people say? It is possible that when the people will come to know that you have taken a low caste cobbler as your master, they may turn against you, and it is possible that he may turn you a cobbler too. So his mind started creating such thoughts, such doubts in him. But since he had the desire to do the devotion of Lord, he also started thinking that maybe I should find some occasion when I can go to see Ravidas, where nobody else would watch me doing that, and in that way I can get the knowledge of God. So it so happened that one day there was a big fair on the bank of River Ganges where everyone from the kingdom had gone. So King Pipa thought that there was the good opportunity to go to Ravidas because now nobody will know that he has gone there. So King Pipa went to Ravidas. At that time Ravidas was working and he was taking the water from a bigger tank and putting in the smaller tank. So when Ravidas saw King Pipa coming, he thought that he is a king, but still he has come to my door and I should give him something. I should give him something which he may remember all the times. I should do something so that he may remember that he came to the saint. So when King Pipa came near Guru Ravidas, Guru Ravidas said that, "Okay king, cup your hands." Now you know that when the master says something, because of his aura and because of his personality, the jivas cannot say anything. So since King Pipa was impressed by his personality, he could not refuse. So he at once cupped his hands, but his mind was again with him. So his mind told him that if you will drink this water, you will be turned, you will be made into cobbler, and you will be spoiled. At that time he was wearing a long sleeve kurta like I am wearing. So when Guru Ravidas poured the water in his hands, he did not swallow that water, he did not drink that water. Instead, he just let the water flow down the sleeves of his kurta, and afterwards he returned to his home, thinking that if he had drank the water, he would have become the cobbler. So he called his washerman and he told him to wash the stain of that water right away. The washerman took the kurta, that shirt, to his home, and he started heating the water and told his daughter, who was very innocent and very young, to suck out the stain of the water. Now that daughter of the washerman was very innocent and young, so instead of spitting out the stained water, she swallowed, and as she went on swallowing the water, her inner vision got open and she started talking about the knowledge, and she started talking about the inner planes, and that became known to the people in the neighborhood. And after a few days everyone came to know that in the washerman's, that daughter of the washerman has become a Mahatma and she is talking about the inner secrets and the inner knowledge. King Pipa also came to know about that washerman's daughter, and since he desired and he was yearning to do the devotion of Lord, so he came one night to the washerman's home. When the washerman's daughter saw King Pipa coming, she at once stood up. So King Pipa said that, "Dear daughter, don't stand up. I have not come to you understanding you as a washerman's daughter, but I have come to you understanding you as a Mahatma, and I want some knowledge of God." She replied that, "Your Highness, I have not stood up understanding you as a king, but I have stood up only because whatever I have got, whatever I have obtained, everything I have done, I have obtained from your shirt. The secret was in your shirt." Now, it is the quality of the mind that first he makes us do the mistake, make the mistake, and afterwards he himself makes us realize our mistake. So then King Pipa realized that it was the mistake he had made by not swallowing, by not drinking the water which was offered by Guru Ravidas, because by then he had realized that at that time Guru Ravidas was showering his grace upon him. So at once he went to Guru Ravidas and begged him to shower that grace once again on him. And he said that, "I am sorry that I made that mistake. I should have drank that water." So Guru Ravidas said that, "King, at that time such was the will, such was the moj, and the water which I was giving you was not the water. It was the nectar which was being flown down from Sachkhand, and I wanted to give you that, but you did not accept it. Anyway, now I will give you the initiation, and you will have to meditate upon that Naam, and then you can get that nectar. So King Pipa got the initiation from Guru Ravidas, and after receiving the initiation, he did not just remain idle. He worked very hard in the meditation, and he became a perfect saint, and he attained the highest status of Sahaj. And his hymn, his Bani, is included in Guru Granth Sahib, because you know that in Guru Granth Sahib, only those Mahatma's Bani is included who had attained the supreme status, the highest status.
ਇਹ ਕਹਾਣੀ ਮੈਗਜ਼ੀਨ 'ਚ ਵੀ ਛਪਦੀ ਰਹਿੰਦੀ ਹੈ। ਮੈਂ ਆਮ ਤੌਰ 'ਤੇ ਸਤਸੰਗਾਂ ਵਿੱਚ ਸੁਣਾਉਣਾ ਹੈ। ਮੇਰੇ ਸੁਣਾਉਣ ਦਾ ਭਾਵ ਇਤਨਾ ਹੀ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਇਹਦਾ ਸਰਬੰਧ ਮੇਰੀ ਜ਼ਿੰਦਗੀ ਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਬਹੁਤ ਜ਼ਿਆਦਾ ਹੈ।
ਆਫਨ ਦਿਸ ਸਟੋਰੀ ਇਜ਼ ਪਬਲਿਸ਼ਡ ਇਨ ਦਾ ਮੈਗਜ਼ੀਨ ਐਂਡ ਆਈ ਆਫਨ ਟੈਲ ਦਿਸ ਸਟੋਰੀ ਇਨ ਦਾ ਸਤਸੰਗ ਐਂਡ ਦੀ ਪਰਪਸ ਔਰ ਦਾ ਮੀਨਿੰਗ ਆਫ ਟੈਲਿੰਗ ਦਿਸ ਸਟੋਰੀ ਟੂ ਯੂ ਅਗੇਨ ਐਂਡ ਅਗੇਨ ਇਜ਼ because there is a great relevance of my life to this story.
Sant gareeb nawaz hunde hai, koi gareeb bane, aap di pyala khali kare, oh bharan waste taiyar hunde hai. Gareebi da matlab eh nahi ki assi tan daulat ya ghar baar kise nu luta dena hai. Parmatma ne sab kuch ditta hove, ਅਸੀਂ ਉਹਦਾ ਸਮਝ ਕੇ ਵਰਤਦੇ ਹੋਈਏ, ਇਹਦਾ ਨਾਂ ਗਰੀਬੀ ਹੈ।
ਸੇਂਟਸ ਆਰ ਮਰਸੀਫੁਲ ਵਨ ਟੂ ਦਾ ਸਫਰਿੰਗ ਵਨਸ। ਇਫ ਸਮਵਨ ਬਿਕਮਸ ਪੂਅਰ ਔਰ ਹੰਬਲ, ਦੇ ਆਰ ਰੈਡੀ ਟੂ ਸ਼ਾਵਰ ਦੇਅਰ ਗ੍ਰੇਸ। ਇਫ ਸਮਵਨ ਐਮਟੀਜ਼ ਹਿਸ ਕੱਪ ਐਂਡ ਪੁਟਸ ਇਟ ਇਨ ਫਰੰਟ ਆਫ ਦਾ ਮਾਸਟਰ, ਦੇ ਆਰ ਆਲਵੇਜ਼ ਰੈਡੀ ਟੂ ਫਿਲ ਇਟ ਅਪ। ਇਫ ਸਮਵਨ ਬਿਕਮਸ ਪੂਅਰ ਐਂਡ ਹੰਬਲ, ਦੇ ਆਰ ਆਲਵੇਜ਼ ਰੈਡੀ ਟੂ ਬਲੈਸ ਹਿਮ ਵਿਦ ਆਲ ਦਾ ਰਿਚਸ। To become poor doesn't mean that you have to give up all the belongings, all the things you have of this world. To become poor or humble means that if God Almighty has given you all the riches and all the things, still you use those things, understanding it as Almighty Lord's.
Parmatma Karpal sadai das de re bhukhe nu roti pyaase nu paani kudar da asool hai zarur mildi hai oh dilan diyan jaande san ਜਿਨ੍ਹਾਂ ਨੇ ਦਿਲ ਦਾ ਦਿਲ ਨੂੰ ਰਾਹ ਬਣਾ ਲਿਆ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੇ ਉਸ ਨੂੰ ਸਮਝ ਲਿਆ। ਉਹ ਦੇਣ ਵਾਸਤੇ 25 ਸਾਲ ਹੋਕਾ ਦਿੰਦੇ ਰਹੇ ਭਈ ਦੇਣ ਵਾਲੇ ਦਾ ਕੀ ਕਸੂਰ ਹੈ, ਸਵਾਲ ਤਾਂ ਲੈਣ ਵਾਲੇ ਦਾ ਹੈ। ਪਿਆਰਿਓ, ਅੱਜ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਰਾਜਸਥਾਨ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਜਾਂਦੇ ਹੋ, ਤੁਹਾਨੂੰ ਨਹਿਰਾਂ ਵੀ ਮਿਲਦੀਆਂ ਹਨ, ਸੜਕਾਂ ਵੀ ਮਿਲਦੀਆਂ ਹਨ, ਲੇਕਿਨ ਜਿਨ੍ਹਾਂ ਦਿਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਰੇਗਿਸਤਾਨ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਕਿਰਪਾਲ ਪੈਂਡਾ ਮਾਰ ਕੇ ਗਏ ਸੀਗੇ, ਉਸ ਦਿਨ ਕੋਈ ਐਸੀ ਸਹੂਲਤ ਨਹੀਂ ਸੀ, ਪਾਣੀ ਦੀ ਵੀ ਬੜੀ ਕਿੱਲਤ ਸੀਗੀ। ਸੋ ਮੈਂ ਦੱਸਦਾ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਨਾ ਤਾਂ ਮੈਨੂੰ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੀ ਕੋਈ ਵਡਿਆਈ ਕਰਨ ਵਾਲਾ ਮਿਲਿਆ ਮੇਰੀ ਜ਼ਿੰਦਗੀ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ, ਨਾ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੀ ਕੋਈ ਨਿੰਦਿਆ ਕਰਨ ਵਾਲਾ ਮਿਲਿਆ। ਇਹ ਹੁਣ ਉਹੀ ਜਾਣੇ ਕਿ ਕਿਹਦੇ ਦਿਲ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਪਿਆਸ ਹੈ, ਕਿਵੇਂ ਜਾ ਕੇ ਉਹ ਪਿਆਸ ਬੁਝਾਉਣੀ ਹੈ। ਉਹ ਖੁਦ ਹੀ ਆਪਣੀ ਦਇਆ ਮਿਹਰ ਕਰਕੇ ਇਸ ਗਰੀਬ ਆਤਮਾ ਕੋਲ ਗਿਆ, ਇਸ ਗਰੀਬ ਆਤਮਾ ਨੂੰ ਨਾਮ ਦਾ ਅੰਮ੍ਰਿਤ ਦੇ ਕੇ ਇਸ ਤਪਦੀ ਆਤਮਾ ਨੂੰ ਠਾਰਿਆ। ਇੱਥੋਂ ਅੰਦਾਜ਼ਾ ਲਾ ਸਕਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਕਿ ਸਾਡੇ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਕਿਰਪਾਲ ਕਿੰਨੇ ਕੁ ਅੰਤਰਜਾਮੀ ਸਨ, ਕੀ ਉਹ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਆਤਮਾ ਨੂੰ ਦੇਣਾ ਚਾਹੁੰਦੇ ਸਨ।
ਹਜ਼ੂਰ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਕਿਰਪਾਲ ਯੂਜ਼ ਟੂ ਸੇ ਦੈਟ ਦੇਰ ਇਜ਼ ਫੂਡ ਫਾਰ ਹੰਗਰੀ ਐਂਡ ਵਾਟਰ ਫਾਰ ਥਰਸਟੀ ਐਂਡ ਇਟ ਇਜ਼ ਦ ਲਾਅ ਆਫ ਨੇਚਰ and the nature provides food for hungry and water for thirsty. He knew what was in the heart of the people, and the heart talks to the heart. For 25 years of his life, Master Kripal always used to say that the one who has come to give has no problem, and he only gives. All the problems are with those who receive. So he knew about the hearts of the people, and he knew what the desires were in those hearts, and according to their receptivity, according to their desires and yearning, he fulfilled everyone's desire and he fulfilled everyone's yearning. Nowadays, in the present time, when you people go to Rajasthan, over there you find good roads, you find the canals, there is a lot of greenery there. But in the time when beloved Lord Kirpal traveled to Rajasthan, it was not like that. It was very dry, it was a desert, and the roads were not so good, and it was not very easy to travel in Rajasthan. So at that time, when it was very difficult to travel, Hazur Maharaj himself showered his grace upon me, and he himself went there to quench the thirst of this poor soul who was suffering and who was being heated up. He went there and he showered the rain of Naam upon this soul, because he knew that who is suffering for him, who is waiting for him, because he knew about our hearts. So the meaning of saying all this is for you to understand that how much all-conscious our beloved Lord Kirpal was, and how he knew that who is sitting in his remembrance for him, and how he went to the places to quench the thirst of the dear ones.
Our closing bhajan is on page 266, Ah Kripal Kola Beta. Oh Kripal, come and sit with us and go through the pages of our hearts. What crime have we done that you quietly go away from us? As long as the breaths flow, we cannot forget you. If you do not believe it, put your hand on our heart and see. I am yours. I was yours ever since I loved you. Why should I be afraid when I have loved you? I have come to your door with hopes and expectations. It is up to you whether, becoming the Sawan of happiness, you give us alms or send us away empty-handed. Try us. I will come swimming across as Sohani came. But at least once sit with the Jab and go through the pages of our hearts. Oh, Kripal, come and sit with us and go through the pages of our hearts. What crime have we done that you quietly go away from us? Bhajan of Sanchi on page 266.
Akirpal kole bete asande moldilande varake ho ikon kanami sato langajando chupakake langajando chupakake. Akirpal kole bete asande moldilande varake ho ikon kanami sato langajando chupakarke langajando chupakarke. Asinahi pula sakade tenu, jina chira savargade ne. Asinahi pula sakade tenu, jina chira savargade ne. Sachinahi onda jetenu. Vexine hat darake sachinahi onda jetenu vexine hat darake Holy Kanakana Misato Langajando Chupakarke Langajando Chupakarke Akira Palakola Bete Asande Poldilande Varake Ho ikone kanami sato langa jando chupakarke langa jando chupakarke teri hi ha teri sa jat to chaiya tenu Teri hi ha, teri hi sa, jata to chahiya tenu. Pyara tere sanga kita eta, kire na pire dara ke. Pyara tere sanga kita eta, Kire na pire darake. Ho ikone kanami sato. Langa jando chupakarke. Langa jando chupakarke. Akire pala kole bete asande. Poldilande varake. Ho ikone kanami sato. Langa jando chupakarke. Langa jando chupakarke. Dare tere te aye hakuja. Ashumi daleke Dare tere te aye hakuja Ashumi daleke Pade kera jamoda de kali Kushia de sawan banke Pade kera jamoda de kali, kushiande sawan banake. Ho ikone kanami sato, langa jando chupakarke. Langa jando chupakarke. Akire pala kola bete asande, poldilande varake. Ho ikone kanami sato, langa jando chupakarke. Langa jando chupakarke. Vek paraka kesanu soni van ganja van gitara ke Vek paraka kesanu soni van ganja van gitara ke Parikavari bekola ajaibade Poldilande varake Parikavari bekola ajaibade Poldilande varake Ho ikone kanami sato Langa jando chupakarke Langa jando chupakarke Akirpal khol bete asande poldilande varake ho ikon kanami sato langa jando chupakarke langa jando chupakarke.
Oh, Kripal, come and sit with us and go through the pages of our hearts. What crime have we done that you quietly go away from us? May God bless us all.